Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Richard Shawright.
I'm pleased to say, joining me in the studio right now, is a Rugby League Hall of Famer, Gary Schofield. Gary, you're back. How are you?
Very well, Rich. Yourself? Yes,
yeah,
very well.
Not too bad. Obviously, Wave, you're with six wins in a row now, so you know, can't get much better at the minute. But actually, I want to start with a sad piece of news, which since you were last in the studio, we haven't really mentioned on air, much to our shame, is the death of Mick Sullivan, your joint record Greybeards and cap holder with yourself, died a couple of weeks ago, and a great player, and obviously a fellow member of the Hall of Fame with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely, Rich, and you know, Michael hasn't been well, you know, for, you know, nearly 18 months, 2 years now, and it wasn't unexpected, to be honest with you, but still, you know, still saddened by it. I got to know Mick quite well, obviously, when I equaled his record, back in 1994. A true gentleman, and a couple of things I'd like to say about it, realistically, is from a point of view, you know, there's a few players in the game who've been recognised, you know, in the Queen's Honours List and the Newey's Honours List. And why Mick Sullivan hasn't been awarded an MBE or an OBE is ridiculous. And also, as well, for Michael Sullivan not to be inducted in the Hall of Fame when it first came out, I think, way back in 1980, including in the first players who was listed to it all those years ago. Again, I think he's an absolute disgrace. I think the people at the RFL, from a point of view, should hold their heads in shame, because when you look at the respect, and when people talk about great players, one thing for sure, Richard, is when you get guys like Neil Fox and Alex Murphy and Billy Boston saying Mick Sullivan was the hardest and one of the fastest and one of the most genuine rugby league players that's ever played there, I think it's an absolute disgrace that Mick Sullivan wasn't given the accolade what he fully deserved. And when he got it, it was far too late for him, unfortunately. You know, his family, from a point of view, you know, when we got inducted, you know, two or three years ago, yeah, his family fully appreciated it. Michael, unfortunately, didn't know too much about it. And when you look at him as a player, the tries, what he scored, you know, look at his Great Britain 46 and 41 tries, but, you know, two World Cups and four Ashes winning series, you know, an absolutely tremendous record, which, you know, from a point of view, won't be beaten. But from a personal point of view, to be ranked alongside him, not just in the Hall of Fame, and they say as the most capped Great Britain player that will ever be, I'm absolutely delighted to be recognised with such not just a rugby league player, but a gentleman as well.
And a player who, in his career, broke the transfer record twice, which is not bad going as well.
It is.
To Wigan and to Hull.
Absolutely, Rich. I'm going to say, you know, going from Wigan and then over to the other side, St Helens. But one thing for sure, you know, the memories what Mick Sullivan has given to everybody, you know, will live in the memory for the rest of their lives, that is for sure. And I think the biggest compliment, again, when you talk about the great players, it's from Billy Boston. Billy Boston says Mick Sullivan was the best and the hardest winger he's ever come across. And I'll tell you what, for somebody like Billy Boston to say that, who wasn't too bad himself by being pretty tough and pretty hard, you know, it's a great compliment.
There's only 24 people, I think, in the Hall of Fame, which shows you know, just how good he was, because obviously the game's been played since 1895, and obviously yourself in there as well. It is certainly an elite group, and it's good for Rugby League that it hasn't been. Sometimes, you know, and this is a bugbear, and the word legend is far overused.
Yeah, it is.
Don't
agree.
Deserve it, but there's a list of 24 people, all of whom have given something to this sport that can never be taken away.
Yep, I agree totally. And when I was leading, you know, the League Express last week, and the records and the try score, no, it's try scoring fee, and I say two World Cups and four Ashes winning series. I tell you what, I played in six and didn't. Okay, we got to two winning them, to be honest with you, but never managed to get the Ashes. And Michael, you know, he was part of four winning Ashes Test series. But I say, not just a great player, Richard, but a great person as well. He'll be a sad loss, obviously, to his family, and the greatest game of all, have lost one of its greatest.
Looking back on that 1992 series, you were obviously played in during the week, and I'm just watching YouTube and flicking around clips of various different things, and that test match in Melbourne where you scored in that one, what kind of feeling was that? Because obviously going into that game, you'd lost the first game of the series. winning that one, levelling things up against a great Australian side, it must have been a great one.
Well, the memory, there's a few memories of it, to be honest with you, and I say, to be honest with you, we should have won the first test, and believe it or not, Martin Afaya got caught twice from behind by Andrew Ettinghausen. You know, we played a bit of an open game, and we were slinging the ball everywhere, and Martin, he got caught by Ettinghausen behind twice, and okay, the scoreline will tell you Australia, I think there was about 20, I think it was 25-6 or 25-8 in the, it finished up there, so it looks like a pretty easy game, but it wasn't. But that second test, as you mentioned, the memories is quite. And I'm getting goosebumps talking about it now because the English fans, there was between 8,000 and 10,000 who, and the 8,000 to 10,000 fans who came out and they believed they were seeing a Great Britain side that's going to bring the Ashes home for the first time. What I think is 1970. It's the great days of, you know, the Frankie Myler team and a young Mal Reilly involved. And the first memory was, when we was going to the stadium, Princes Park there in Melbourne, was just this absolute sea of red, white and blue. Red, white and blue. And then there was a group from Armley, and he were leading it, Big Roy Dickinson, Big Roy Dicko, the Leeds legend. It was a group called The Regiment, and there were 40 of them, just literally a big band, all just double file going down there, playing the drums, playing the regiment call. But seeing all them fans there, and quite clearly, we didn't have to say too much. It was just a matter of, well, if they think we can win it, so can we. So, anyway, you're looking at the first 40 minutes. We're going at half time 22-0 up. 22-0 up. And to be honest with you, Rich, we get to the dressing room, and if I am totally honest, we could bloody well believe what had happened, to be honest with you. I can reassure you. So we're 22-0 up. And it's the shortest speech I've ever had, or any player, I would imagine, at either club level or international level, from the great Mal Reilly. It was quite simple. It's quite simple. All he said to us was, same again, lads. And that was it. We all just sat there, waited till the referee's whistle went, and went out for the second half. But again, boy, oh boy, Australia scored two quick tries, and then 22-10. But the way the lads just, from a point of view, not just held in there, we wanted to put more points on. And then if we say Graham Stegman going down the blind side there, nice step there, chip over the top for myself. People say it was a forward pass to Chariots, but I'll say the momentum room might have been back in 1992, to be honest with you. And as I say, we went on to win the record score, 33-10. It's one that I'll never be forgotten. But quite simply, the two huge memories is the support from the English people was sensational. Unfortunately, they won't see that again because there's no Great Britain tours anymore, which, again, is a disgrace what the RFL done, what that Richard Lewis did by taking the Great Britain badge away. And secondly, the speech from Malcolm Reilly. Quite simple, short and sweet, few words, same again, lads, and that was it.
And I guess this, since 1992, that series, obviously the World Cup final in the same year, we never really had a chance of... I know there's been a couple of one-all going into the final test or whatever, but there's never been that sense that we were that close to perhaps.
Well, I'll tell you what, I say from in 92, and I'm not making this as an excuse, because I don't make excuses, as you well know, but normally the test match is, what, 2 weeks apart. The third test after Melbourne, it was just a week apart. And to be honest with you, it came too quick for us because everybody knew the euphoria. We didn't get too carried away, but the way that our league was over here, it wasn't that intense and that intense. So if we'd have had that extra week to just build up and build up, we would have brought the Ashes home. But lucky enough for them, you know, they played at that sort of level, that intensity, as we know, with their league and the state of origin. And I think they only beat us, I think it was 14-10 or 16-10 in the third test at Lang Park. But, again, it's another one that got away in 94, you know, when we took a 1-0 lead at Wembley and, as I say, from there. But, unfortunately, played in as I mentioned, you know, six Ashes series, so near, but at times, yet so far.
I'm just looking back on that series now, and that tour as a whole, that must be something that the players today are never going to experience again. But that must be a superb experience to go out there and play against the club sides and the representative sides and so on and so forth, and then the test series as well.
I tell you what, Rich, I were lucky enough to go on four Great Britain tours, and I say you're going out to the bush areas, you know, places like Wagga Wagga and Tamworth and Rockhampton, and that's a heartland, you know, out there. That's where all the big stars from Australia, you know, the scouts go miles and miles to get the legends, what we know, the Australians produced. But unfortunately, due to the ridiculous decision of the Great Britain team being disbanded and also two Great Britain tours, that these players aren't going to experience that. You know, they're not going to experience where... I'll tell you a true story here. In 1984, we played Tamworth, and I was only 18, and, you know, Frank Miley put me on the wing. Hey, Rich, I'll tell you what. When we saw these Tamworth players, literally just farmers... Farmers, full-blooded farmers. I think the smallest one was about 6 foot three, about 18 stone. They had 4 stone of head. Two of it were all right, but the other two was because they had big bushy beards and the hair growth on the head. And it was very, very frightening and intimidating. But one thing for sure, we just managed to win that. And one thing for sure there, and again, it's what these memories, what living in you for forever is simple. The hospitality, what they give you after the game, the friendships, what you developed, is quite sensational. And unfortunately for these players today, they're not going to sample that.
Mentioned the 1994 series. Obviously, the Welsh Rugby League are setting up their Hall of Fame. Jonathan Davis is going straight in there. What that try at Wembley? I know everyone talks about a Fires try the year after, but Jonathan Davis is trying that first lesson against Australia. What a great player he is.
Oh, yeah, he was. He's one of the you know, one of the best who have come from the from Union Tower Racks. But, yeah, sensational try. We all know Jiffy on the arcing run there and diving into the corner. So which players are getting inducted into the Hall of Fame straight away? The Welsh. Many congratulations to all the players who are going in there. And I think it's great that the Welsh Rugby League have decided to set this up now. And who knows? You know, it might kick it on. The game down there might hook. You know, hopefully, get the development down there working, and also to get the accolades what it deserves.
Yeah, it's something we mentioned before, isn't it? It's a shame in a sense that rugby union's gone professional because that seam of players has kind of dried up. It's Jim Sullivan, Billy Boston, Lewis Jones, and Gus Risman heading in there. Actually, Jonathan Davis is yet to be.
I say, because them four lads are already in the RFL Hall of Fame, aren't they? Yeah. So and I say anybody, the first players who how many are they inducting at first? Hope it's not a boatload at first.
It looks like those four plus Clive Sullivan, David Watkins, and Jonathan Davis. So yes,
I don't think there would be any argument or any debate of that. So, many congratulations to the player, because for sure all them players, you know, they did Rugby League very proud and did Wales very proud as well.
Well, the great thing about the fact that the internet is around and YouTube is the fact that you can go on there and watch pretty much anything that's ever happened. I was watching Martin Afaia playing in Australia, Jonathan Davis going down there and being a star there as well. And I guess, yes, obviously there's plenty of great talent over there in the NRL in these days, but it must have been different in those days because you were obviously playing almost 12 months a year.
You did, and as I say, which, you know, from my point of view, Rich, I say, well, being a sportsman, you can't be tired. And I played, when I signed for Hull in 83 and I went on my first tour in 84, well, to be honest with you, I was on tour in 1983 with Barla, so I went straight from Barla there, straight into the first team at Hull. So from 1983 till 92, I played all year round. I played all year round, whether it was going to play in Australia with the Balmain or the Western Suburbs in 89 or going on Great Britain tours, you know. And as I say, you know, the way that, I guess not just our players, but also sport in general, you know, tiredness and fatigue, they seem to make it as an excuse. But one thing for sure, I know when I was on tour, and it was quite funny at times because when you're away on tour, you know, you're representing your country and you're training and you're playing and everything's there for you, you know. And some players got homesick. I'll tell you what, Rich, to be honest with you, I got sick, I had to come home. not that I didn't want to come home, but I got sick, I had to come home because, you know, I just loving every minute. I could have easily done another 6 weeks and another 12 games because the experience, what you're having out there and the hospitality and the friendships, what you get, it's a once-in-a-lifetime, and I was lucky enough to do it 4 times.
Before we get on to today's or this weekend's action, you described Tom Johnston's try the other week at Bellevue as being almost like one Martin Afaia would have got. Martin Afaia has been tweeting him at the moment and telling him to keep going and giving him lots of praise. As a winger, just how good was Martin Afaia? Obviously, he's in the Hall of Fame. We've seen his great tries, obviously, but how good a player was he to play?
Well, I'll tell you what, Rich, right, and it annoys me. It annoys me immensely when people say Martin Afaia, he wasn't a proper rugby league player. boy, oh boy, he was. Okay, I could care less that his defence wasn't very good. He could tackle when he wanted to. He'd just stand in front of him or fall, and fall over him. Martin and Fayette wasn't there to be defensively. Martin and Fayette scored tries nobody else would ever score. I don't know, there's Boston and there's Sullivan and Van Vollenhoven and the rest of the guys and Brian Bevan. But Martin and Fayette scored tries nobody else would ever score. He wasn't just a winger, he just didn't stay and wait for the ball. He scored his tries from all over the place. His vision was very good, his awareness was excellent, but he had that what you can't coach and what you're born with, and that was pace. And as I say, sensational rugby league player. Doesn't matter, you know, they say about under the high balls or defensively. For somebody to score nearly 600 tries like he did, and he came from rugby union pretty late. But, I say, his vision and his awareness. And I'm hoping Martin's, you know, with Anton Johnson, you know, do it there. Because, I tell you, that try he scored at Bellevue, what, 2-3 weeks ago now, has got to go down as one of the best tries that's ever been scored, either by a Wakefield player or anybody else who's played there. But, yeah, they ain't too many better than Martin and Fayette, I can reassure you. One thing for sure, I'd rather have Martin in my team than playing against him.
I was watching the 10 tries he scored against Leeds.
Oh, yeah, move on. Come on, Richard, move on.
Sorry, he scored plenty against Wakefield as well.
Well, I tell you what, though, he scored 10 tries against us, but to be honest with you, and I know Mark Wilson's not here at the moment, but he had Gene Miles playing inside him, and I tell you what, 7 of them tries, Mark Wilson could have scored them that easy. So 3 of them might have been a bit of long distance, but Gene Miles set him up lovely for 7. And to be honest with you, I think you could have scored 3 of them tries as well, Rich.
Well,
to be honest
sure
with you, so
that,
you might have got your hat trick if you'd have played outside Gene Miles. But Wolfie for sure, Martin and Fayette's up there with the best of them, the best that's ever been as a winger.
Of players around today, who would you have liked to have had alongside you in your team?
Yeah, an interesting one, I guess, to be honest. One thing for sure, who would get plenty of tries if he was playing outside me, and at times he needs a bit of a wake-up call, would be Callum Watkins. Callum Watkins playing outside me, because all I would be saying to him, listen, you just run into space. Just run into, don't worry about anything else, because I will get the players to come to me. You know, because if they don't come to me to tackle me, then I'm going to score myself. It's as simple as that. But all you do is run into space. Whether you're 5 yards, 10 yards, 15 yards away, I'll find you. So, yeah, certainly from a backs point of view, Callum Watkins, and if he was playing outside me, he would definitely, I'll tell you, I'm not bossing up because, you know, today, and I could read the game and put people through gaps. Callum Watkins playing outside me would be 20, 25 tries a season. He would be one of them.
Speaking of Leeds, they won. They've won a game. Beat Hull on Friday. Everyone's, we've won. Yeah, confidence is lifted. I mean, you may not have been aware that some players perhaps didn't take too kindly to your comments, but let's, you know, cards on the table. If there's anyone you're going to take criticism from, it's, you know, someone who's been there, done it, and got the T-shirt. And it wasn't as if you were criticising them and saying they are rubbish. It was the attitude, the performances, and knowing that they can perform much better.
Well, at the end of the day, Rich, right, and because I was up there on myself on Friday, because I received my heritage number, you know, which I'm totally proud of, you know, and the response what I got, you know, from both Hull fans and Leeds fans was excellent. So, but at the end of the day, as I got up there in the in the Lombard, just, you know, doing it. And by the way, I predicted Hull to beat Leeds 34-14. You can imagine the bit of stick when I got. But hey, listen, that's what it's all about, opinions.
Right,
and yeah, I've heard about, you know, the little bit of stick when I've got. But at the end of the day, the league table doesn't tell lies. The league table doesn't tell lies. And all I'm doing, as I say to people even now, and I'll say it again on radio, all I do is give an honest opinion on what I see. I'm not making things up. I'm not being personal or hurtful to anybody from a point of view where, as a person, because I don't know most of them as people, but what I do know is what I'm seeing as a rugby league player. That's all I'm doing. I'm giving an opinion as a rugby league player. The league table doesn't tell lies. We all know Leeds have got a leadership out there. The organisation has been very, very ordinary, and quite simply, confidence has been shot. So, when you look at Friday night's game, nobody would have thought that they would have beaten up. Okay, the weather turned a little bit bad, so I guess it maybe, from a point of view, maybe a leveller. But when you look at the way Hull played, for mine, with the chances what Hull had, they had chances maybe to win that game maybe once or twice, but they didn't take it. But what Leeds did, they hung in there, and for a confidence booster, it'll certainly be there without a doubt. And I thought Jamie Jones was absolutely brilliant again, because also as well, young Jordan Lilly, You know, hopefully now Jordan's not going to be shipped out to Featherstone. He's ready, and we know what our great mate Phil Kaplan says, you know, he can't play week in and week out, because that's rubbish. He can. He wants to play week in and week out. He gave him that direction. He gave him that where what they've been missing around the field. And as I say, it's a confidence booster, and, yeah, hopefully, as I said the week before last, hopefully Leeds season is going to start at Salford. It didn't, because Salford got the victory, you know, but Leeds, victory against Hull now. Hopefully after 11 games, this is where Leeds season starts, and get that consistency going.
Friday night against St Helens, who were comfortably beaten by the Castleland Dragons, who do look very good. 5 away wins in a row for them as well.
Yeah, they look as though the real deal, but as I said, Leeds' next two games is Saints away and Huddersfield away. Who would have thought Huddersfield would have beaten Warrington? But yeah, Catalans were outstanding against St Helens, and what I'm seeing from that with the St Helens team, it is that at times they're clueless. And one thing again, and I'm only judging on what I'm seeing here, is I know Luke Walsh is getting quite a bit of criticism, you know, certainly over the other side of the parents from the St Helens fans. And to me, he just doesn't look as though he's enjoying that environment. He doesn't look as though he's enjoying that pressure what he's on him, because he's their main playmaker. But he doesn't seem to be enjoying it. And also, to the criticism, we all have to take criticism. We all have to handle pressure. And he, to me, doesn't seem as though he's enjoying that responsibility. And credit to Kieran Cunningham, as I've mentioned now a few times throughout the season. Delighted again, the coach is giving it to his players, to the senior players this time, where they're not performing, you know, because at the end of the day, players can't keep blaming coaches, you know. So now, Darryl Powell's done it, so has Paul Anderson, we've had Kieran, and then we all know what the whole players did to Lee Radford after Widnes. So yeah, well done these coaches, because, and I'm sure we'll go on to this, you know, in the programme show after Hull KR's absolutely pathetic performance yesterday, don't be blaming James Webster from there, you know. So the simple fact is, well done coaches, and start putting pressure back on the players, because it's them who are out there who's got to come up with the right performances.
No, I'm not an ex-pro. I played at school, I was useless. I'm not a coach, I've never done anything like that. I just sit in the stand and say what I see in front of me in terms of match reports, and you look at and you listen to coaches and what they say after games. And I've got this theory that when coaches come out and say, oh, we've got all these injuries, oh, we're all sick, all this and that, it gives the players an excuse that we lose, well, we can just say that, it's not our fault. We look back at, obviously, the Wigan scoreline last week, 62-0 at Wakefield, ridiculous scoreline, loads of players out injured or ill, but they still have plenty of quality in that side. If they lose by 10, 20 points, you go, you know, fair enough, wait for the inform, so on and so forth. But when Sean Wayne comes out and goes, oh, we've got all these players out injured, oh, we've got all these players that are ill, oh, it's touch and go, this, that and the other, that just gives an excuse to players, doesn't it? They can go, well, you know, coach has given us a free ride this week. Or is that me speaking out of turn as a gob on a stick in the crowd?
Do you know, Rich, as we know on this radio station, we don't speak out of turn. You're only giving an opinion and comment exactly what you're seeing and what you're hearing. You're exactly right what you're saying. Players nowadays, and they're looking for excuses. And if a coach says that, then they're going to say, great, he's backed us up. And as you mentioned, because I was away last week in Ireland, and when it came through, that score, Wakefield 62-0, and, you know, the lads have got it on the phones, and I'm thinking, no, they've got this wrong. It's two W's, but, you know, is it 62-0 the other way? But obviously it's not. And a great credit to Wakefield. If you don't want to turn up Wigan against us, then the way they play at the moment, Wakefield, with the freedom of expression and that confidence, then they're going to turn you over. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. With some of the players today, if you give them a little bit of rope to make excuse, they will take that full piece of rope and say, well, you know, this is the issue why we didn't perform. Absolute rubbish at times. Poor, poor excuse.
Yeah, we're going to beat Castleford on Friday. It's not like a fractious game. Well, when Mark appears, we'll get his comments on that, because he was not impressed by the refereeing whatsoever. I saw Huddersfield Warrington on Friday. Awful conditions. Rained throughout the game, heavy rain. But and obviously, yeah, looking at the fixtures on Friday, you thought, well, it could be a full sweep of away wins. It was all home wins. But I thought Huddersfield played almost a perfect game. You know, to nil the league leaders who've been superb in attack all season. they never really had many chances, and didn't really look like they had much of a clue of what to do in front of a good Huddersfield defence, who obviously have had plenty of points scored against them in recent weeks to nil the side top of the table. That's a good performance from Paul Anderson's men.
It's a great performance, and as you mentioned, they keep it 1 inch to nil, because when you look, okay, Sando's out, you know, but I don't think they're making that as an excuse. They had enough quality there. It, maybe, okay, not to win the game, but certainly put a few points on the board, haven't they? You know, when you look at their side. But I mean, Paul Anderson's been waiting for this performance, hasn't he? You know, again, if their season's going to start, it's exactly like the Leeds Rhinos, you know, it's took them now to around 11 to get it started, but... So I think the big point on Friday night, Rich, was, you know, Danny Bruff was back to his best, wasn't he? Danny was back to his best. I spoke to Matt Orford, isn't he? He was doing the commentary on Friday night. I was speaking to him up in Edinley on Friday night after the game, and he just says it would Bruff back to his best. You know, his kicking game was excellent. He just organised everything. And if Danny Bruff is firing, then the Giants will be in the top eight. There's no doubt about that.
Maybe he's happier again now. I don't know.
But... Well, first thing I said to Matt was, Rich, was, well, have they made him captain? Not as yet, I believe, but I think maybe, you know, if there has been a bit of a difference between himself and the boss, Paul Anderson, hopefully that's been sorted out, because, you know, I like Paul. I've known Paul for many years from his Leeds days. We, you know, as a station, you know, we like Paul. Certainly, Bruffy as a player. We like Huddersfield as a club. We like them all.
Yeah.
You know, we're not. There's no favourites here. But one thing for sure, if Anderson and Bruffy are back on side, then, and I say, the Giants won't be out of the top eight for very long.
Well, they've got Wigan on Thursday, which is not always been a happy hunting ground for them. But if Wigan have still got these injuries and still making up.
Is that a Huddersfield or Wigan?
It's at Wigan.
Yeah. Well, say the confidence what they've got. You know, the Giants now. Because to be honest with you, and I say we're speaking to Matt Wilson as well about the game. Wigan have just been Wigan. You know, they're not doing the right lot, and they're being, you know, pretty naughty in the tackles, and bullying, intimidating, all this sort of thing. So, yeah, if the Giants forward certainly could stand up to him and Bruffy back to his best, it wouldn't be a surprise if the Giants turned them over.
And they did it on Friday without Crabtree and Patrick. I think Patrick was out ill, Crabtree injured, so if they can get those back for Thursday as well, should be a much more interesting encounter. Wakefield through in the Challenge Cup, beating Sheffield 44-10. Dewsbury came through a scare against York, 30 points to 16. So they're in the hat for the fifth round draw. Joined by Toulouse, who beat Lee, 10 points to 8 yesterday. And good win for Batley on the telly as well against Featherstone, 28-10. But I guess the story of the round... Hull KR 22, Oldham 36, Oldham 24-6 up at half-time. And I guess, you know, you're a semi-pro team, just come up from the third tier of rugby league. You've got a lead at half-time, 24 points to 6. You're sat there thinking, Super League team, full-time pros, full-time fitness. By the 60-minute marks, gas runs out, they run away with the game. But not to be, and credit to Oldham, scored another 10 points in the second half and hung on defensively. That's a great performance from Scott Naylor's team.
Absolutely. And one thing for sure, Rich, we just mentioned there, well, you know, OKR players had expected Oldham to tire. Well, they didn't.
No.
They didn't. And it's quite simple, this. Them players of Huddersfield Rovers should hold their heads in shame. I've been speaking to one of the major sponsors today regarding the performance, a gentleman called Steve Saddington, and again, let's not blame the coach here. Let's not blame the coach. The coach has done his homework on Oldham, and Oldham, I think Oldham, he was saying Oldham scored tries, what they knew what they were going to do through the little kick through. So this is all about the players' attitude. This is all about the players taking it far too easy. And them players should hold their heads in shame. As you mentioned, yeah, they're in lead at half-time, and then, okay, oh, yeah, they might tire. One thing for sure, it doesn't matter who you play against. If you're not going there with the right attitude, this is going to happen. And I'm delighted, you know, because this is what a Challenge Cup's all about, isn't it? Should it happen against full-time players, part-time?
No.
Allegedly, no. Allegedly, no. But you don't turn up with the right attitude, because at the end of the day, it's right, okay, we know quality players are great players, should, in the end, get the better of them. But if you've got players who... at times, on the same level, then these players, you give them a sniff, then you're going to get found out, and that's exactly what the Huddersfield Rovers players have done yesterday. They have been found out. They have not just let themselves down, from a point of view, yeah, let the chairman down. Certainly the coach, James Webster, but also to them Huddersfield Rovers supporters. Totally, they are spending their hard-earned money, and to watch them come up with a sort of rubbish what they did yesterday... They should be holding their heads in shame. And, well, we're next for them, because I think Neil Hutter's a very good guy. He only wants the best, like all chairmen do for Hutchinson Rovers, but it's a real, real head-scratcher for him why his players turned out with that sort of attitude.
Well, they're away at Cass next Sunday, which obviously is not going to be an easy game for them. But you'll have obviously played, you've mentioned this before, going up to amateur teams.
Correct.
Or low division teams in various cup competitions over the years. It must be a mentality issue, because obviously,
Rich,
on paper you're better than them.
Rich,
you should win.
I'll just tell you a couple of true things here. Yeah, when we went up to Kells with Leeds, I think it was 80. Maurice Bamford was in charge, so it'd be 87, 88, yeah. And we knew what sort of attitude Kells would be. You know, they're going to rip into us, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. But we said, we're not going to allow that. We're going to do it to them first. So that makes it easier. That's exactly the attitude what Hutchinson Rovers should have had. You said, we're going to put this game to bed by half-time. They make the job easier for themselves. But they haven't done that. The second one's 94 and 95, Workington came to England in the quarter-finals. And all they were doing was, yeah, this is what we're going to do to Leeds. I think they had Kevin Allison, they had Rowan Phillips and Brad Heppey in their team. And all they did was, this is what we're going to do to Leeds. This is what we're going to do to Leeds. And we didn't need any motivation, because not people were telling us, it was in the newspapers. By half-time, we put the game to bed. It was 28-0. We destroyed them. But that was the attitude from a point of view where we want to make the job easy for ourselves. We apply ourselves properly for the first 40 minutes with the quality what we've got, with the right attitude, then we make it easy for ourselves. Quite simply, Hutchinson Rovers players yesterday just thought they had to turn up with a banana and an orange and think, if it needs be, you know, we should be all right for the last 20 minutes, because we're a Super League team. Your attitude's wrong. Don't blame anybody else. And then players today, as I mentioned, about holding their head in shame, take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror. Take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror. Because if you don't, you've got a serious problem. And Mr. Hudgill is saying he's going to root out this problem, because there is a problem there. There's no doubt about it. And one thing for sure, the question what needs to be said to some of them Hutchinson Rovers players is, because there'll be some young lads there in the academy, all they want to do is play for the red and whites. All they want to do is want to put that Hutchinson Rovers shirt on. So the question should be, and I would have them all in there. I would have them all. If I were Mr. Hudgill, I'd have Mr. Hudgill there, I'd have Peacock in there, I'd have James Webster. And the question from them three to all them players who played yesterday, say, listen, and I'm being serious about this. This would be from me if I was Mr. Hudgill in that dressing room. And I'm being serious about this to you players. If you don't want to be here, there's the door. Because quite simply, we have players here who do. And for me, this is where the A team should be. This is where the A team would have the benefit, Rich. Because quite simply, them players who played for Hutchinson Rovers yesterday, OK, some of them might have played OK, some of them played rubbish. But the lot of them collectively should have been dropped and playing A-team football either Thursday, Friday night, and replaced them by all the kids. And I can reassure you, you would get a response without a doubt. Not just from them so-and-sos who played yesterday and let Hutchinson Rovers down, but the kids who want to play for Hutchinson Rovers first team. And the response from them will be great against Castleford next week. But unfortunately, the coach can't do that. The chairman can't do that, because we don't have the A-team anymore, and it would teach him a lesson.
This is part of the statement from Neil Hudgill. Too many cheap words by too many people who haven't bought into what we're trying to deliver. We have dishonest people in our club, and they will be smoked out.
Well said. Well said, Mr. Hudgill. You know, again, as I've said, now for the last two or three weeks, I think they realise that some of these players, at times, they are taking liberties. So don't blame chairman. Don't blame coaches. Players as individuals, and then as a team collectively, take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror, because you shortchange your people.
James Webster called it the biggest embarrassment of his coaching career.
Do you know what as well, Rich? Okay, all right, we know with James Webster, you know, at Wayfair and this sort of thing, but one thing for sure, as a coach, right, and supporters, if you get beaten by the better team, but you put a shift in,
yeah,
everybody can accept that. Everybody can accept that. But one thing for sure, when I say I was speaking to my good friend over at Hutchinson Rovers today, and a gentleman called Steve Sarrington, you know, they'll accept at times getting beaten by the better team, but if they put a shift in, we can accept that. But one thing for sure, from yesterday's performance, it's quite simply not acceptable. Not acceptable at all.
Have you been in dressing rooms then where you know there are players there who are not interested, not...
Yeah.
How did you deal with it?
Pretty hard at times.
Would you be able to deal with it? That's the same way pretty, this year, I guess.
Pretty hard at times because what you tend to find was there were the coaches' players. The coaches signed them, you know, so it was pretty hard to get them out. But as I mentioned before, you know, when that person, Mr. Lawton, came to Leeds, you know, I wanted him sacked after 2 weeks. And the players who he was signing, quite clearly, were not good enough for Leeds. And also, as well, they couldn't care less about Leeds Rugby League Club. They couldn't care less about putting that shirt on. They just came here because they got well rewarded. And as we said, the rest is history.
I know it's difficult, isn't it? Because full-time professionals, people go to clubs, don't necessarily have an affinity to them. But it must be pride in performance more than anything.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, I accept that. Not every player who plays for Wakefield deeply cares about the club as much as the supporters or the chairman or whoever, because that's professional sport. But you would think, especially for, you know, if you're playing for a team like Hull KR or Wakefield, who are, you know, likely to finish in the middle eights or at the very best the low end of the top eight, you're wanting to play well, so you'll end up at a better club.
Absolutely. And also, I think I mentioned a couple of times before, it's how I monitor myself in consistency of performance was... Judge yourself out of 10. And I say, back in my days, we played at least 40 games a season because of the cup competitions, what was in there as far as the league game. So I judge myself where, out of the 40 games, I would say 36 games out of 40, I would be looking to making sure I'm going 8 or 9 out of 10. And that's the level of consistency. What I set myself on a personal point of view, not a coach, or a psychologist, or a dietitian, this sort of thing, know me personally. So that what that works out is, one game out of 10, you know, you may have a 5 or a 6. That's happened because you're not human, aren't you? You're not a human. So consistency in performance is what it's all about, and that's a personal thing, what you should set yourself. You should set yourself, that's all a goal there. But okay, I know it's a team collectively, but if you do your job properly in a way, whether you're a loose forward with the creativity, you're a front rower who does the hard yards and does the tackles, you're a half-back who plays with that vision and awareness and creativity, but it should always be you as an individual for your own performance. And if the team, from a point of view, the players, have that collectively, you're not going to go far wrong. But unfortunately, as we know around the game at this moment in time, there's not a lot of quality. They are allowed to get away with some of these pathetic performances, as we found out yesterday from Ulster Rovers, and as I say, mates, right, Mr. Hudgill has come up there, so has Mr. Webster regarding that performance. They would love to drop the lot of them, stick them in the A-team, send them up to where, if they had to play Workington or Whitehaven or over at an old Norton Park where they're going to get a good hiding. But no, unfortunately, due to where the game has changed, they're not allowed to do that. And I just wonder what them players are thinking today. Are they sulking? Are they feeling sorry for themselves? I bet you they're not. Mm. I bet you they couldn't care less. I bet you they could not care less.
I guess I can't drop down into the City of Hull Academy now. It's I don't know what happens. I don't know what happens to the players. Stick a load of kids out. I don't know. Give people who, I don't know, care.
Exactly what I've just said. And I say the... you know, the big Hull KR sponsor and, you know, supporter, you know, my good friend, and I say, Steve said, all they want is the players to put a shift in, give them 100%, and if they get beat by the better team, they can accept that. But the players know they're not going to be dropped. They're not going to be dropped, you know, so I guess what James will be looking for, and so will Mr. Hudgill, is a reaction at Cass. But also, as well, they're going to Casford, who have just been beaten by Wigan. They're going to Casford, who have ambitions, you know, before the season started, finishing the top four. But they're looking for the top eight. So it ain't going to be easy for Hookies and Rovers, but they'll be looking for a reaction. But as I say, mate, to be honest with you, right, this conversation, from a point of view, shouldn't be happening. They've caused it themselves. As I say, again, I'm up and on them, and I'm backing the chairman here, and I'm certainly backing James Webster as the coach. It's up to them players. Why did they go into that game yesterday with the attitude that if we turn up, then we're going to be okay? Totally wrong.
Challenge Cup then. Obviously, we've had one Super League team knocked out already. You've said before this is probably the last chance Leeds have of winning a trophy this year, in terms of it looks unlikely that they'll end up in the top four and the playoffs on the road to Old Trafford. But with the likes of Hull in very good form up until obviously that defeat the weekend, but still playing well. Wakefield a bit resurgent. It could be an interesting competition this year with plenty of teams, you know, if the draw's kind to them. You know, I'm thinking maybe we're going to get a repeat of the 1960 final. Maybe it's going to be Hull versus Wakefield or something like that. It's certainly like that. But, you know, I'm thinking if I was having a bet now on the competition, I'd be looking at a team like Hull who, they might make the top four. They're certainly looking better than last year, but they'd love to end this hoodoo of never winning at Wembley, and I'm sure the players, that plays nothing on their mind, does it? Because it's nothing to do. They can't change results.
Hey, Rich, it does, because they get reminded of it all the time. They get reminded of it all the time. But yeah, I tell you what, you wouldn't rule out, you know, I say, let's just say Wakefield, for instance, the confidence what they are playing with, and if the draw is kind, and let's not forget here now, right? You know, Toulouse went through yesterday, Alden went through yesterday, and to be part of it, you would have expected Lee to win, wouldn't you? You would have expected OKR. So they're two half-decent teams, you know, who, if Wakefield did get them in the, say, for instance, in the next round, and they had to, say, go to an OKR or Lee, then it would be a little bit, a lot more tougher, wouldn't it? You know, so, yeah, you wouldn't rule out, you know, like a Wakefield, if the draw's kind, or a Hull, and, you know, a Catalans and all this sort of thing. But it's all about the draw, mate, isn't it? It's quite simple as that. It's all about the draw, and I say I don't know who's favourites at the moment, because when you look at this Super League season so far, does anybody really want to finish top? does anybody want to finish top?
Wigan and Warrington are joint favourites at 3-1. Then comes St Helens at 6. Catalan Dragons, you can get 8-1 on them.
Ooh, I tell you what, that's not bad, is it? Catalans.
12's on Hull.
Yeah.
Leeds are in there at best price 10-1. Winners 20s, Castleford. 22-1 on Cass.
Yeah, well, I'd say again, all about the, even, you know, Widnes and Oka, they've dropped off for the last three or four games, but hey, you know, up for a game for, you know, one off games, then, no, there's five or six teams in there. And again, Rich, don't rule out Wakefield the way they're playing.
Could be a very interesting competition this year, the Championship. And it's good that, after a few lacklustre years, we've had a couple of years where, obviously, the story of Leeds winning the Cup for the first time in a long time, and Castleford getting to the final as well, and Hull KR getting to the final last year. As much as, you know, winning the Super League, winning League Leaders' Shield shows you the best team over the consistent over a year, but for romantics like myself, who probably aren't going to see their team win the Grand Final, I'd love nothing more than to get to Wembley, and that must be a special feeling walking out there, even obviously not winning there, but still getting your team to Wembley, getting to the final, all the build-up and everything. It must be still the most special of weeks you can have.
It's and I say the specialist of days and occasions. You know, I was lucky enough to, well, I say lucky enough, I played in three Challenge Cup finals and didn't win neither of them, you know, but no, it's great, and you know, for the directors and the supporters, you know, it's the best day in rugby league ever. You know, any player will tell you, any supporter will tell you, and I keep, you know, I've said it a few times now, you know, if you ask a player what would he rather have, a Wembley medal or Grand Final medal, it'd be Wembley every day of the week. There's no two ways about that. But again, when we look at the Hulkester Rovers situation from yesterday, let's just go back 12 months. Nobody expected Hulkester Rovers to get to the Challenge Cup final. When they played Warrington in the semi-final, I said to Mr. Hudgell, you know, because, you know, I know, Neil, I know we've had a bit of a banter and a bit of crack at times, but I said to Neil, just enjoy it, you know, keep smiling. He says, yeah, I am going to do. He never, ever, after then the next 80 minutes, thought about, from a point of view, lovely, lovely. I didn't expect this in our budget. You know, we're going to get an extra 300,000, 350 grand. So, Neil again this year would have been thinking, if the draw's kind to us again, you know, maybe a quarter-final, semi-final, then who's going to know? Again, them players, from a point of view, for the occasion what the Challenge Cup is, not just let the chairman down the coach, but also to the supporters, because them Hulkester Rovers supporters, okay, we all know what happened. They got absolutely hammered 50-0 by Leeds. But it's memories of going to Wembley. Your club have taken part, and they can't take it away from you. And as I say, long look at themselves and players this morning, but will they care less? I bet they don't.
The other thing that's happened while you were away is, Blake Solly's leaving to go and run the South Sydney Rabbitohs, which means, obviously, there's an opening in the RFL to run Super League. So we've given you the job, Gary. we don't know how this is happening.
Oh, no. Listen, social media's going to go bonkers now.
The people who still believe you're going to be the next Wakefield coach. But now we've given you, you're running Super League. What are you going to do to make Super League as close to the Australians or just a better competition? We've put you in, you're in charge. What are you doing?
Well, but at the end of the day, when you look, and I say the team is exit of the Super League, at the end of the day, though, Rich, he hasn't got the final say. Just say, for instance, you know, he put six things in front, then this is what he said is going to happen. It can't happen because it's the clubs themselves who run Super League, isn't it? You know, so say, for instance, I put the proposal, right, overseas players, overseas coaches, we're not having any. We're going to do it the British way. I would set a 10-year plan in. This is my idea. We're setting a 10-year plan in. We're going to do it the British way. You know, it's going to be all British from players. The A-team would come back. And so there, it's a 10-year plan, because I'm thinking about international-wise here. Great Britain would be brought back. And the tours would be brought back. I guess the big question would be, and I say I'm not a believer realistically that you play too many games, but I may consider that. I may consider, because why I'm thinking of that, Rich, is quite simply, I want quality week in and week out. Would I make it lesser teams? I think I may do, which could be a quite controversial one. I would make it lesser teams for better quality. And then see where we go from there. But my big one would be, I want it all. I want it all British. From coaches, from players, and then, and as I've said many times before, and it happened in my day, too many rubbish overseas players over here taking the positions of quality of our youngsters, not being given the opportunity, whether it's a halfbacks, front rowers, second rowers, loose forwards. And some people may say, well, you know, you've been a bit harsh there from the overseas point of view. Well, listen, I think there's plenty of players who want to get into coaching, given that opportunity. And what I would suggest, again, would be, well, listen, as we all know, everybody seems to copy each other now, don't they? And I would suggest, as the chief executive of the RFL, well, I'd call in all the coaches, whether from professional level, amateur level, and say, listen, I don't want you copying each other. I want you, as a coach, to coach how you want to coach. You don't have to coach through the manual, because that seems what's happening. You have to be set in sort of manual and coach away from this manual. Go away, coach your players how you want them to coach. If you don't want them to tackle, don't let them tackle. If you want them just to keep passing the ball and pass the ball, playing attractive rugby league, off the cuff rugby league, chips over the top, interceptions, vice versa, go and coach how you want the game to be played. Don't be copying each other. I don't want you copying Mr. A, I don't want you copying Mr. B and this sort of thing. And I bet you within 6-12 months, you would see smiles back on coaches' faces from a point of view where they don't want to copy, and also to the players. Because I think one thing, for instance, here, when you look at the way the Wakefield players are, this is not just a convenience where the coach has come in. Yes, he has Chris Chester, but all he's done is let the shackles off. He's seen what's in his players, and I've mentioned, you know, and I've been a little bit critical of him at times in Jacob Miller, but there's a player in Miller, and we've seen that now. You know, so from a coach's point of view, you don't want to do the wrestling. Ask the players what they're comfortable with at times. Give a bit more onus on the players. Because when you look at all this wrestling now, and even when I watch the Championship clubs, when I saw Batley and Featherstone play, you see, they're all playing the same. They're all playing behind the back. They're all copying and copying and copying. Well, why do you want to copy somebody? It's like at school. If I copied the person next to me, and he put the wrong answer down, well, I'm going to put the wrong answer down. What am I going to learn? What am I going to do? I want to, you know, try and think for yourself. Try and think for yourself. So there will be some processes I would put in.
I'm guessing then, as a young player, it's better to let them go out there and try things. And if it doesn't work, it's better to have a go rather than just be a robotic.
Absolutely. But also as well, if it doesn't work the first time, try again. If it doesn't work the second time, try again, because I'll tell you, it will happen. It will happen. And do you know what as well? And whoever brought this over, I think it was David Way, I think. And anyway, and the biggest thing, what came into our game, and it was absolutely ridiculous. And when I found out, I wasn't only just fuming, but I was asking the question where, you know, our halfbacks, one had to play left, one had to play right. You couldn't go from left to right or right to left. You had to stay on that side of the field, which is absolute nonsense. Absolute nonsense. And when I think about it, David Waite were over here, what, early 90s, was it? I tell you what, one thing for sure, right? Andrew Johns wasn't asked to play left or right. Brad Fittler wasn't asked. Laurie Daly wasn't asked. And then now, when you look at the way Jonathan Thurston is and the way Cooper Cronk is, for God's sake, why have we listened to somebody who's not English, by the way, anyway, and he made the 8 tours of the Great Britain job as well, to be honest with you. You know, while we're stifling our talent, this is the point I'm making, is stifling our talent. Where do we see too many second rowers and front rowers at times, yeah? The passing the ball, but when do we see that freedom of expression, like the kid who I play with at Hull in Lee Crooks? Listen, let the players express themselves, because one thing for sure, what rugby league players do, it's like everybody, as a kid, everybody wants to be 6 or 7, but you can't be. You can't, because you haven't got the brains, and some of the big forward, you know, big lads that can't be 6 and 7. It's like at football, everybody wants to be number 9, but you can't be. But one thing for sure that they want to be, they want to enjoy what they're doing. They want to express themselves what they're doing. They want to entertain when in the entertainment business. And that's a philosophy. That's a philosophy I would bring in, because the most important stat, and I don't care less what anybody says, I couldn't care less what anybody else says. The most important stat is that scoreboard. Doesn't matter what sport you're in, doesn't matter what sport you're in. Rugby league, rugby union. If you score 19 points and somebody else scores 21, what happens? You've lost. But all the stats tell me we made more yards, we made more tackles, but you're still losing. At cricket, if you score 210 runs and somebody scores 212, what happens? Do you know where I'm coming from, Rich? The most important thing in sport for me is that scoreboard, and that is the biggest stat.
You're going to make all those stats people redundant.
Oh. Do you know what? Do you know what, right? At the end of the day, why do coaches want to listen to stats people? I know when I had my short, short coaching career, and also as well when I was a player, right? When I was a player, I didn't need a video. I didn't need my coach to tell me what I'd done and what I hadn't done, because I knew myself. This is what I'm saying about from a personal point of view and consistency. So I didn't need reminding what I'd done and what I hadn't done. And one thing for sure, I didn't need a stat man saying to me, "You've only made 4 tackles, Scully." Yeah, well, the important ones. How many do you want me to make? And then it came, and again, is I know Daryl Powell, he loved tackling Daryl. You know, when he moved to standoff, you know, kept saying, well, you know, Daryl's a great standoff because, you know, he loves his tackling, he's doing 20, 26 tackles. Well, sorry, the standoff role is working things out and plotting and ploying, you know, and creating 5, 6, 7 tries. That's my philosophy from there. If you want to tackle well, go and be a forward. Well, okay, he went to be a loose forward from there. But I'm only making an example here now where Every player has their own individual roles, but as a team collectively, well, for sure, when I went to Balmain and Frank Stoutland said to me, "You're here to score tries, you're not here to defend," he put Wayne Pearce in my role. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. And the biggest stat, and you statsmen, must be in a decent living as well, all the rubbish at times you come out with is, yeah, it wouldn't be a big onus in my team. As long as the scoreboard is favourable for me, scoring more points on the opposition, I'm very happy.
Is there any rules you'd change on the field in terms of to make the game? You mentioned entertainment factor to make it perhaps more entertaining.
I'll tell you what I would change to make the game more skillful. Players have to be, I would change the 10-meter rule. I would bring it back. I would bring it back to 5 meters. I would bring it back to 5 meters.
We've talked about this as well in terms of player welfare.
Yeah, just to player welfare, but I wouldn't do it. I would. That would be the major reason for me. It would be better skill level. Yeah, because you've a little bit. Well, I say, less space, but what you do there then is makes it stand deeper, and that's what happens there. So yeah, the big rule I would change would be the 10 metre rule and bring it back to 5 metres. So there you go, another chief executive rule in there.
We started off by talking about the Hall of Fame and the passing of Mick Sullivan. There are just 24 names in the Rugby League Hall of Fame here in Britain. Is there anyone who you think who, and any glaring exceptions who should be in the list who aren't in the list? And I look at it and, you know, the likes of yourself, Martin Afire and Ellery Hanley, probably the last era of players to be in there.
Sean got inducted.
So you're kind of the last. Scott, have we not had any Hall of Fame caliber players since, you know, the mid 90s.
Well, you've got to be retired as well. You know, I think it's 10 years or something there. But I don't think these, to be honest with you. I don't think these, because one of the main things why you get judged on with the Hall of Fame is from your international performances. And I think since Super League started, since 1996 to the present day, there's some very embarrassing scorelines, Richard. You know, so, okay, I know, people have won medals and won trophies, but it's all about the international. Okay, as I mentioned before, I played in six Ashes series, but, we weren't so far off, but no. From this era, no, I'd be pretty hard to pick anybody.
And no one from your era or the past who you think should be in there who perhaps been missing?
I look at the quality of Crooksy, but how many, you look at international performances, you know, there. Yeah, I think there's got to be one considered, that's Andy Gregg. Yeah, I think Gregg, not just, look at his Wembley appearances, I think 9 times out of 9 he's won there as Andrew. So, yeah, I'm a little bit surprised that Andrew hasn't been inducted. But again, if they look at international, I think he made 27 appearances for Great Britain from there. And it's that, he played in six Ashes series as well, did Andrew. And we all know that memorable performance in 88, don't we? You know, that great try he set up for, God bless your soul, Michael Gregory there. So, yeah, if there's one player from my era who should be considered, then, Mr. Gregory.
We've said this before, and Mark will be in a bit, and we'll steal you away from the studio. But when you are, part of an elite group of players in that Hall of Fame, just how, I don't know, is it humbling to be in with some of these names who, the likes of Neil Fox and the Jim Sullivan and the Mick Sullivan and Billy Boston and all these names who, you can mention them all because they're all just legends of the game.
I'll tell you what, Richard, right, and I'm getting goosebumps now, you just mentioned that. When we've had the British Lions dinners, I can just sit and listen to the tales of Alex Murphy and Neil Fox and Billy Boss, even our great coach in Mal Reilly, Roger Millward, and these sort of players. The stories, what they tell us, and the way the game, how they used to play, how they played the game. And I must admit, I'm glad I didn't play in their area because it was just fuggery. The way they went about belting each other and all this sort of thing. And, Vincent Corrales protecting Alex Murphy and all this sort of thing. But, yeah, I love listening to their stories. And while I am in their company, I'm just in awe. I'm just in awe of Mr. Murphy, Mr. Boston, Mr. Fox, Mr. Millward, Mr. Lee there. And also as well, I know myself, Ellery Sean and Martin from our same era, we are very, very privileged and proud to be with these legends, and as I say, we've just lost one of the great ones as well, in Mick Sullivan. Yeah, I mean, I'm in total awe, and I have to pinch myself that I am with these great players of our great game, because it's huge. And when you look at the records, what they've got, and the standards they set themselves as individual players, sensational. Like, you look at Neil Fox, you look at the record what Neil's got. And as I say, we know the legendary Kevin Sinfield at Leeds there and his points there. Say, Rich, Kevin Sinfield, to get anywhere near Neil's record, he'd have to play for, I think it's been said, another 10 years to get anywhere near, his points record at club level. So that just tells you, not just as a goal kicker, but how many tries did he score and all this sort of thing. And when you're just in their company, and the respect what they have for each other, Rich, like the respect what Murphy has for Fox, the respect what Murphy has, for Boston and vice versa. It's a pleasure to be in their company, and one thing for sure, it's a pleasure and a real honour to be up there with them guys. Yeah.
And as a sport, do we use these people in terms of telling these stories? Because one day
I find
people won't be around this.
I find it quite embarrassing, to be honest with you, because when you look at all the other sports, let's just say for instance internationals. When you look at the other sports with the football and certainly rugby union, they use them as marketing tools. They use them as hospitality tools, and we should be used as marketed people, because we want to give something back to the greatest game of all. And when we want to, We want to go to these test matches. We want to meet sponsors. We want to be part of hospitality packages where, yeah, people want to listen to these stories. People want to listen to these tales. And also, as well, they want to listen to our opinions on today's game. And then also, too, they want to, as they give an opinion now, say, for instance, you know, when the Four Nations are over here now, you know, when England are playing Australia, and you know, why shouldn't the Hall of Famers be asked? Or... the likes now, you know, Adrian Morley's retired and all this sort of thing. You know, have a bit of balance where in the hospitality suites, you know, there's ten British Lions or however you want, 10, 15 British Lions in the hospitality suite and use us as marketing tools. That's what other sports do. And, no, our game doesn't. Unfortunately, I think since Super League came in 1996, and a lot of people are in agreement here, they couldn't care less about the history. They just think the game's been invented since 96 to the present day. And, no, the history has been forgotten. And it's a damn shame because one thing for sure, Richie, right, one thing for sure, Murphy's a personality. Billy Boston's a personality. Neil Fox is a huge personality. Malcolm Reilly is. Martin Afire is. Schofield is. Edwards is. Hanley is, Lewis Jones. When you look at these names, you know, they are huge personalities. And I can tell you, because I know, because when we meet up and we speak about it, we want to give something back to this greatest game of all. There's nothing better than using us as hospitality marketing tools, because we don't mind that whatsoever, yeah, and give something back to this great game. And people love listening to the history of the game.
When, you know, we get through a Wembley final or whatever and we see... whichever cabinet minister of the day is parading in front of the teams to shake hands. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have politicians there because it's, you know, trying to curry favour at the highest level and whatever, but why isn't there a Hall of Famer walking down the line, shaking hands as the guest of honour? Because I can only imagine, as exciting as the cup final is and whatever, the fact that then you're shaking hands with someone who's been there, done it, and you think, wow, this is the stage of which I could be on as...
Richie, I agree, but only the RFL and the marketing people can answer that, can't they? You know, but as I say, that and you know what, Rich, as well, as I mentioned, we've all got from our own careers, and certainly from a touring point of view, you know, and the stories what we've got to tell, and the great thing about what a lot of people do now, certainly with the hospitality circuit and speaking circuit, is the question and answers. You know, when I just had my recent testimonial, my first one was the Hall of Fame, the Hall of Fame one, and as I say, the people in that room, honestly, and I get goosebumps, the people in that room, the respect and passion they showed, and Alex Murphy, Billy Boston, and Lewis Jones, and Foxy, when they got up first, the first four there, they brought the house down. Literally brought the house down with the tales. And then with the question and answers, you know, about the best players have played, all the incidents, what they've done, you know. Brilliant. And people want to listen to these stories. And why the RFL don't grab it by the horns and say, right, we are using the biggest names, what the games produce, because what I do know is from these people is, we don't want paying for it. All we want... it's to give something back to the game, bite to eat, couple of beers, and sell the greatest game of all. And I tell you what, sponsored would flock to what? Murphy on the table, Boss, because they're all still there. They're all still there in the head. They can make great conversations, great stories. Having Murphy and Boston and Reilly and Hanley and Afire and Schofield and Edwards and Lewis Jones, do I need to go on? They would absolutely love it. And a question and answer with these people, I'll tell you what, the memories... the people in that audience would take away, would live with them forever.
Well, I think this is the important thing, is I obviously never saw Neil Fox play. He retired before I was born. But from the stories from my grandparents, I know just how good he was and how important he was to Wakefield. And I think it was last year I was doing the Wakefield St Helens game. And I'm in the press seats at Wakefield, which are obviously very close to the supporters, as you know, Gary, because you've got plenty of abuse in there. and along a couple of seats down was... Ray French, obviously, former TV commentator, works for BBC Radio Merseyside. He was commentating on the game, and at halftime, he sat there, and Neil Fox and Keith Halliday came along, and they just had a chat at halftime. I'm thinking, I'm sat here next to three greats of the game, and you're thinking, these are people who Speaking as a supporter, I'm sure people would love to see these people. No. Because, you know, and I think back to, obviously, a few years ago, we lost Dave Toplis. Great player for Hull and for Wakefield, and a great coach at Wakefield. They've got us back in the top flight, won the Yorkshire Cup and all that. You don't know when these people aren't going to be around anymore. And we need to celebrate people and say to these people, thank you.
Yeah,
because without people like yourself and all these great players over the years, we wouldn't be here because we wouldn't watch the game.
Absolutely. And again, we talked about the history of it. And as I say, another legendary, I say the player, and what was he, 5'2", Roger Millward? You know, how good was, you know, little Roger? And I agree totally about with the history of it. And people want to listen to us. People want to ask us questions and the stories what we've got to tell. You know, Merce's been, you know, on the Daft Dinner circuit for a while, and you know the stories. One of them, I think, when he Keith Holden when he played in Australia there, and Keith Holden is the number one fullback, not just Australia but the world. And Merce was only 17 at the time, and Merce says, "Is he? He hasn't played against me yet." You know, that's just, you know, the sort of stories what people want to hear. And, you know, again, Murph, the way that Karelis looked after him, you know, if anybody said to Murphy, you know, "I'm going to belt your head off," Karelis says, "No, you're not." You know, and when Van Vollenhoven came over St. Helens, you know, Alex, you know, again with the story, you know, he was getting paid 12 months of the year. Well, he said, "Well, I won't pay him 12 months of the year." So, well, you know, we don't play from, what was it, June until August. So he said, "Well, he doesn't neither, so, you know, you pay him the same as him." But it's just wonderful stories what they've all got. And but the banter what these legends have with each other, I'd say, honestly, and I say, with what Boston fought, you know, to the Predators of a Mick Sullivan, the banter what he has with Lewis Jones, with being the Welshman there, and Malcolm Reid, the stories he can tell you from his touring days, and also to playing his Manly days. They're unique, Rich. These are what they are. These stories, what these great players have got, they're unique because they were unique players, and as I say, for the history of the game and what they have given to the game, not just at club level, at international level. Let's not forget here, Rich, right? Let's not forget here. All these players that we're mentioning in the Hall of Fame, they are totally respected. Totally respected. I would say more. Well, I know more anyway, because I know when I got invited to Balmain, and me and Ellery 3 years ago to be inducted to Balmain's Hall of Fame, we are more respected with the history of what we've done for this greatest game of all, for British Rugby League, more in Australia. And that isn't right.
Well, why is that?
Well,
because, as I say,
the
supporters,
RFL,
you know,
the RFL can only answer that, can't they? The RFL can only answer that. Okay, yeah, we get invited down to Wembley. We get invited down there. You know, we sit in the best seats and what have you. But the point is, and it's a huge point, we should be used more often. Used more often, because people want to hear about the history of the game. They want to know the stories about these great players. And I think it's a shame.
If you could go back and relive one moment from your career, which would it be?
Oh, it's Melbourne 92. There's no two ways about it. And I say with the build-up, and then on the courts going down to the Princess Park in Melbourne, and seeing all these between 8 to 10,000 British fans, that regiment, the team from Leeds, that belief what they had in us, and the raw what they gave us, you know, because the Princess Park is not a proper rugby league ground; it's like a, you know, the AFL or whatever reason. You're coming from underneath the stands, and you come up the stairs, and the raw, they were all at the right hand side there, and the raw and there and. And I say, mate, you know, 22-0 up at half-time. Mal Reilly, same again, lads. Finished up the second half, 33-10. The Aussies, two quick tries. Oh, here we go, you know, like Australia been thinking like OKR yesterday. Ah, the Poms, they'll just, you know, they run out of steam. We're full-time professionals, we're far better players, but it didn't happen. 33-10. So, yeah, if I could put the boots back on again and repeat that performance, then, yeah. Brilliant, but yeah, Melbourne. But to be honest with you, I was lucky enough very much to go on 4 Great Britain tours. My first tour in 84, you know, scored my first try in Test football at Sydney. The youngest ever player to score a try in a Test match between the two great countries. Scored my best try I've ever scored in my career at Brisbane in the second Test, you know, in 88. Didn't work out too well in 88 because I depressed my cheekbone, so I came home early. 90. I came of age as an international standoff, got the Man of the Series there. 92, led Great Britain to that great victory, just come short. And as I say, touring, the stories, what we've got. But also as well, Rich, right, it's a great friends what you meet. you know, the great friends, not just your own teammates, you know, because my roommates, you know, Joseph Lydon in 84 for 10 weeks, absolute brilliant. 88, it was varied. It was varied. Mal didn't want us just with one person. So I think a very big Dave Stevenson and a couple of others. In 1990, it was a great learning curve. I was the vice captain. I had Bobby Goulding for 10 weeks. Say no more. I had Bobby for 10 weeks. But
I think that's longer than his wife, your career.
the friendship what we had and whatever, it was great for that 10 weeks looking after him. Then in 1992, I was the captain, so I had my own room there and what have you. But simply, you know, the friendship's what you get. You know, even, you know, okay, Crooksy was my teammate, and you know, but the friendship's what you have, you know, with Sean and Andy Gregg and Martin. Okay, people say, what about Ellery? Well, Ellery's his own person. Yeah. You know, Ellery's his own man and his own person. But as I still say, it's all about mutual respect, and that's what everybody had. But the story is what we have. Yeah, brilliant. And we should be sharing this with people. We should share it with all the people, because one thing for sure, we're just over the ground here, aren't we, at Ellen Road? But can you just imagine this? Rugby League Hall of Fame. On the road. We're going on the road. We're in Yorkshire. We're in Humberside. We're in Lancashire. We're in Cumbria. I'll tell you what. If you have an audience, let's just say, of Schofield, Murphy, Hanley, Reilly, Boston, a Millward and a Fox, question and answers, they would be sellouts. Would you buy a ticket?
Of course.
There would be absolute sellouts. And I tell you, it wouldn't be an hesitation. OK, Ellery may say yes or no, but apart from that, you know, everybody else would love to do it, because we love talking about our great history. We love talking about our careers. And I tell you what, they would be absolute sellouts. And we'll be for sure. I wouldn't say that to be paid a lot of money, but why don't we donate to charity? Why don't we do it to cancer charities or this sort of thing? Do you know what I mean? Because people would come to see these great legends of our game.
I'll get Mark Wilson on to it. He's used to making events and doing things. We'll set up a theatre tour. We'll go all over the country.
Well, yeah, you know, I think it's definitely on, without a doubt. You know, people, as I say, Rich, we'll be for sure, people would buy tickets. They would.
They would. I've got to let you go, because Mark wants you to do something. And in fairness, you've spoken for about 80 minutes there, which is not bad. Nearly a record.
Rich, you know it's not a problem for me. For speaking.
Oh, I'll tell you what, I'll ask you one last question, because you mentioned Joe Lydon there and Sean Edwards as well.
Yeah.
And I watched Joe Lydon's drop goal the other day, which was frankly ridiculous.
Was that about 64 metres, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what, you know Joseph, right? Because I say I got to know Joseph very well on the 84 tour. You know, we were roommates for it all. But Joseph, he was just an actual athlete. The laziest man ever on the training field. he got, because we all know everybody, the talent. This is what I go on about my management, Rich, right? Every time with Joseph, didn't matter which coach it was, whether it's a Frankie Myler or a Mal Reilly or a Maurice Bamford, Joseph would not train. He'd go out on the field and all he'd do is kick a ball. Stand on halfway line, put bombs up. Stand on halfway line, put kicks into touch. Practice goal kicking. Would he train? Would he do any fitness work? Not a chance. But boy, oh boy, could he play. And how quick was he?
And people like Lydon, who's obviously been part of the rugby union set for a long time now, and Sean Edwards.
He's just left, though, hasn't he? Yeah, he's just left, hasn't he? His development job, yeah.
People who, again, we've kind of lost to our game. And I guess, you know, the game's moved on or whatever, but as great players, people who should be involved somewhere.
Well, do you know what?
I know it's difficult because obviously there's a lot more money in rugby union, and I understand that.
But do you know what, Rich, right? I'll just go back even to my era, right? And you want a bad era with the players I've mentioned, you know, because I say that the best Great Britain side I've ever played with, I'll just go through it now, right? Joe Lydon at fullback, the wingers Jason Robinson, Martin O'Fire, centres Paul Newlove and Gary Connolly, myself and Andy Gregory at halfbacks, Lee Crooks, Martin Dermott, Kevin Ward, Dennis Betts, Mike Gregory, bless your soul, and Ellery, right? You look at that team, there's only one person who's involved in coaching, and that's Dennis Betts. How can a game of rugby league afford to lose all that experience? None of us are doing development work. None of us are doing any coaching. None of us are doing any mentoring, which I think should be brought back to the game.
Sure, I mean, obviously, we've talked about your coaching career and it hasn't worked here, there and everywhere, but surely there's a role for players like you.
What I'm talking about is what I'm mentioning, Rich, is, okay, all right, I had 2 goals at the coaching, 13 games at Huddersfield, psychology, no, get lost, and then obviously I was working with a chairman called Des Johnson, 5 games, as everybody knows that. But the point I'm stressing is the experience has been lost. The experience has been lost. Why we wasn't allowed to be staying in the game, whether because we're good personalities, we like to say what we want to say, we'd like to see, you know, things done a little bit differently, who knows? But unfortunately, that experience, OK, Rubin have done very well, have it, as we know with Sean Edwards, with Joe Lydon, OK, Andy Farrell, from a point of view where, you know, he was after us. Well, Andy made his test debut in 93 at Headley when I was captain there. But all that experience has been lost to this game.
You're back with us tomorrow. You've got more talking to do then. You've got more talking to do on the last tackle as well. I'm sure you've got plenty to say about Hull KR then, but it's been a fascinating hour or so. Before we came on air, we were saying that Leicester, pressure, no pressure on them. They're losing 2-1 now.
What do we know? We were saying they're enjoying the pressure.
Jamie Vardy's been sent off and the wheels have come off now.
Panicking, eh? Panicking. They can't handle pressure.